It failed you. Welcome to the Village Oak Tree for August 14th. I'm your host, Terrence O'Donnell, and I thank you for joining me again. It's Wednesday, and the interview I thought I was going to have for you today has been rescheduled for August 28th as my scheduled guest became ill, and I had to back out until he gets better. So I've got a commentary for you here to kind of take up some space. Last Sunday, in my Sunday edition newsletter, I asked myself, why am I doing this? I had a lot of serious thought about this. And why am I spending a good part of my week researching news feeds and articles to talk about a couple of times a week with guests, sometimes not? But the answer came to me with a couple of people from outside the United States telling me that what I'm doing matters to them. This is why I decided that this is worth my time and effort every week. This is also why I'm not afraid of the YouTube censors. As I mentioned last Sunday, I was censored by YouTube for laying out facts from noted writers about the ongoing COVID pandemic. I don't care what the US CDC or mainstream media says, this is still a very serious problem everywhere that no one in the developed world seems to care about very much anymore. Like the flu, only worse. You know, everybody talks about flu rates and vaccines and everything else every year. Well, COVID's become like that as well. The only problem is COVID's a lot worse than the flu. Then we have stories, news stories that fail to make it to mainstream news, like the monkeypox virus in Central Africa that the African Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has declared a health emergency for. There have been some cases of this in the United States and elsewhere, but they usually get put on the back page pages of the AP News. Have you noticed many stories about bird flu lately? There have been some, but again, back page news. What is taking up the focus of the world right now are the wars in Ukraine, Palestine, and Africa, notably Sudan and Central Africa around Kenya, Nigeria, and Rwanda, to name a couple. How many people know about the genocide happening in Darfur, or the hundreds of women raped by the militias as they try to escape the conflicts? How many really care? Everyone cares about the genocide in Gaza because it's front page news due to the huge amount of independent video footage being posted to TikTok and to independent news outlets like Electronic Intifada and so many others. I don't want to sound like I'm downplaying what is happening to the Palestinians by any means. But do you see the difference in media attention here? Even now, after over 10 months of coverage, the world is starting to move on from the atrocities in Gaza. The coverage of the mass killings in the West Bank hardly register in the mainstream news anymore, with the focus elsewhere on Ukraine and Iran. What you also don't hear about in the news is the attrition rate of the Israeli soldiers and their armored equipment. It's huge, but the average news reader or viewer won't know about that. Israel is doing its best to hide that from the rest of the world, much like a lot of other things lately that actually made it out for the world to see. To give you an idea of what I mean, I Googled the IDF casualties since October 7th, 2023. All of the searches gave me Israeli news media, and they're only reporting anywhere from 1,332 on Wikipedia to approximately 700 in the Jewish news. What's missing are any reports from any other sources outside of Israel. I think that's a little suspicious myself. Electronic Intifada reports that there are thousands more dead and wounded that are not being reported, other than leaked out by the independent journalists who risk imprisonment for reporting things like this. And think about all the Palestinian journalists who have been killed in Gaza. Electronic Intifada is also reporting on how badly Hamas is mauling the IDF reservists in Gaza and, to a lesser degree, the West Bank. They have videos from Hamas fighters that are smuggled out every week showing how they are taking out military assets like crazy. Everything from tanks and armored personnel carriers to soldiers using unsophisticated sniper rifles, homemade IEDs, and mobile anti-tank weapons. Americans are running around like Chicken Little, shouting, "The sky is falling," and trying to rapidly move some naval and Air Force assets as close as they can without risking them too much. all the screaming in the news about an extra aircraft carrier group and the announcement of a nuclear submarine deploying to the Eastern Mediterranean as fast as possible is mostly media hype. As one journalist wrote yesterday, the carrier group was due there anyway to relieve the current group that had been extended out an extra 3 months. Both carrier groups will hang out for a couple of weeks or so, but the one that has been there for the last 9 months will come home. The business about the submarine is all scare tactic for the media. No one in their right mind publicly announces the deployment location of a stealth sub unless it's to intimidate people. Last Sunday, I mentioned how many experts have concluded that the Ukrainian invasion of Kursk, Russia was a very bad idea. More and more military experts are piling on with that since then. Ukraine might as well have taken those soldiers out into an open field and shot them for all the good they have done. Now I've learned this morning that a significant portion of these shock troops were NATO troops made up of Poles, Estonians, British, and Americans, and maybe others. Now there's no real hard proof of this, but the Russians are saying that they have intelligence data shown, to prove all this, which may be coming out here soon. As everyone is pointing out this week, which I said last Sunday, these units will be destroyed within a few more days, maybe a week or so. A waste of humans for little to nothing. The leverage that Kiev thought they would gain was squandered away with really bad battlefield strategies. Now that the Russians have mobilized the reservists to deal with the incursion, Ukrainian battalions will be wiped out to the last man, eventually. And, you know, they're giving it maybe a week to 2 weeks. As one commentator asked this morning, will any American dead make their way to Dover Air Force Base with a greeting by media and politicians? Not if they were contractors. As I said in a previous podcast, if America's security contractors were killed on battlefields, the bodies, if retrievable, are brought home very quietly. If any of these NATO soldiers were wearing uniforms with unit patches on them, Russia will make full use of that propaganda in their media and the world at large very soon. But I doubt these NATO commanders will be that stupid as to allow any of these soldiers to wear any identifiable markings. My own experience in Afghanistan back in 2002 is a testament to that. I was part of a U.S. Special Operations unit that deployed right after 9/11, and we didn't wear uniforms or dog tags or carry military ID cards in case something were to happen. Our orders were to do whatever it took to prevent the Taliban from using us as propaganda tools. Dress in local clothing and not have any other identifiable items on us while we were out on the forward operating area. You know, growing our hair out, growing beards, all that kind of stuff. Ukraine does not have the soldiers to throw away like that, which is why this incursion may have been plussed up with foreign NATO troops. More evidence that this war will reach its conclusion very soon with a Russian victory dance and Zelensky either dead or in exile in a Western country somewhere to live out the rest of his life, and likely his wife. If he does go on the run, he will always be looking over his shoulder for Russians trying to eliminate him with a sprinkle of plutonium or some other accident the rest of his life. To add more fuel to the NATO fire, Germany has issued an arrest warrant for a Ukrainian diver, whom they are accusing of helping set the explosive devices on the Nord Stream pipeline, sabotaging 3 of the 4 pipes under the Baltic Sea, severely restricting the flow of gas to Europe back in 2022. The man has escaped back into Ukraine, is likely never to be seen again. There may be more people on his arrest warrant that they're looking for, and they probably won't find him. Takeaway from this bit of news is who set this sabotage operation up. Was it Ukraine to draw Europe into the war? Or was it the US, UK, and other allies who hired this group to carry this out, as some have alluded to? I wouldn't put it past the CIA and MI6 working together to set this up. What better way to draw the EU into the war using throwaway Ukrainian assets? It's not like they haven't done this types of operation before, right? In other war news in the Middle East has become more of a psychological campaign for now. What we used to call a PSYOPs operation when I was a soldier. Israel is still bombing and killing Palestinians by the hundreds as the world waits to see what Iran is going to do about their warnings. The Russians are flying in defensive equipment, you know, likely signal jammers and air defense systems to bolster Iran's already advanced systems to prevent an attack by Israel or the U.S. China is openly siding with Iran now, just diplomatically, but that is significant in and of itself. It looks like Israel and the U.S. are all alone now. There are news stories leaking out of Britain asking if the new Labour Party will start sending weapons to Israel. Just the fact that they are talking about it means that they're talking about it behind closed doors. Israeli extremists led by Itamar Ben-Gvir decided yesterday that marching to the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem to block off Muslims and performing Jewish prayer service in open defiance of Israeli law and the Islamic world was a good idea. He apparently doesn't care about whether the IDF has the resources to fend off the Iranians, Hezbollah, and the Houthis when they come. In this rant to Jewish reporters while marching to the mosque, he defiantly shouted that they would defeat all our enemies no matter what. I say good luck with that. But this is what these religious extremists they are doing, inciting a regional war, thinking their God will deliver their enemies to them in defeat. These people need to revisit their history a little bit. Their history is starting to repeat itself, and not in a good way. And, you know, my example is when the Israelites got defeated and got enslaved into bondage in Egypt way back in the day. And that's just one example. In domestic news, the United States politicians and their federal employees are ramping up their fight to strip people of their civil rights as granted in the Constitution. Republicans like Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, a right-wing MAGA occultist and noted war hawk and combat veteran, is all about sending the goon squads after MAGA dissenters. Senator Lindsey Graham is behind the big military push in Ukraine. I think he has a personal interest there. He has been a strong advocate for an American global corporation called BlackRock to get huge contracts to mine Ukrainian ores, for which they could make billions from at the expense of the Ukrainians. There are a lot more people like this running the U.S. government, not to mention the president, whom a lot of people are asking if he is actually in charge anymore. It certainly doesn't look like it. Speaking of goon squads, there's been a lot of independent podcasters talking about this FBI raid on noted activist and journalist Scott Ritter. If you don't know who he is, he's a former U.S. Marine intelligence officer, former weapons of mass destruction lead inspector during the George W. Bush presidency, then truth teller activist when he publicly tried to stop the war in Iraq when he found out that there was no WMD in Iraq anymore a month before the U.S. went to war there. He's been a journalist ever since. The FBI executed a search warrant at his house last week, taking all of his electronic and paper media for investigation to see if there's any evidence to charge him with under the FARA Act. This is the Foreign Agent Registration Act that they talk about. As other experts talked about in subsequent shows this week, he isn't the first, nor will he be the last, in order to intimidate people from criticizing the U.S. government. So much for the First Amendment. It only applies if you don't criticize the government. The government legislators are passing more and more laws restricting the peaceful right to protest against the government, coming after individuals who dare to stand up in public against policies putting Americans in harm's way. As several people have said in other shows over the years since 9/11, the U.S. used the Patriot Act to turn the country into a surveillance state. Another example of how this is being applied is several recent stories about how a former U.S. representative from Hawaii is being surveilled by TSA now over her public remarks about the government on a news interview a couple weeks ago. Tulsi Gabbard went on the news to tell everyone about a clandestine TSA department called Quiet Skies that targets Americans of interest as they fly around the world. She was tailed by a bunch of assets, both in terminals and on the plane she and her husband were traveling on without her knowledge, until an independent investigative reporter broke the story. She's not the only one by any means, but she's a very high-profile person that was given this SSSS designation by TSA, and it was stamped on her boarding passes. And then the police state of the U.S. spent millions surveilling her and others, and many others like her. This is what it's like to live in the United States now. The United States gets away with so much around the world still. Italy pardoned a CIA pilot, former Air Force, who, along with several CIA employees and contractors, were convicted in absentia of kidnapping an Italian citizen, an Egyptian cleric in 2003, and he was taken to a CIA rendition site for enhanced interrogation. Italy never actually was able to get their hands on these Americans to put them in jail, so they sentenced these guys in absentia. This is just another egregious example of how arrogant the Americans are. These men were all probably given new identities or disposed of in order for those CIA secrets to remain secret. The United States is in a lot of trouble right now, in part due to a president who's not there cognitively, no matter what the administration is saying. He's on the campaign trail whipping up support for Kamala Harris right now, and I'm not hearing much about whether he's coherent or not. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's being led by the hands, so to speak, and in front of audiences that won't betray the party. In other words, staged for the benefit of the voters and a specially vetted media group. All this posturing about Iran in the media, staging of the mighty, laughable American military in the Middle East, telling Iran to please not retaliate, which they refused, publicly telling Israel that they'll protect them, all the while making it known that they are sending another $20 billion worth of military supplies to Israel. If you read the articles, these arms shipments aren't being delivered until at a minimum 2026, and some not for another 3 or 4 years. More years afterwards. Does this mean that the U.S. military industrial complex is concerned that Israel will still be a viable nation state by then? Are they worried about getting paid? That was my first thought when I read about that, but you wouldn't know that unless you actually read the article all the way through, which a lot of people don't do these days. It all boils down to money, as always. The United States is trying to hold off going into a recession right now, balancing rate adjustments by the Federal Reserve. Meanwhile, in the business sector, layoffs are starting to increase, and businesses are preparing for a slowdown. More and more reports are coming out about how consumers are seeing this and buying less, which hurts the whole supply chain all the way to the manufacturers. They're seeing product order slowdowns, which will cause more layoffs, and so it goes once again. The Democrats are deathly afraid of this ahead of November, and rightly so. There has never been an instance in U.S. history when an incumbent party won re-election during a recession, ever. A recession right now would likely hand the election over to Trump. If that happens, it will be game over for sure for the United States. Trump has no idea how to steer the country through a major global recession, much like he had no idea how to steer the country through the COVID pandemic in 2020. He could actually break the country economically in a very short amount of time. Think about all I've said so far this Wednesday afternoon as I wrap things up. I'm already starting to prep for this recession that's coming by stocking up on essentials before things get really bad in the next few months. You're still of working age. You'd better start preparing for another wild ride. For those of us who remember 2008 or the previous one in 2000, this promises to be worse. You work in the retail industry, you might want to start putting aside some money in case your job goes bye-bye, if you can. The experts are predicting that much like the last major recessions, those jobs will be the first to go as stores cut back on employees due to lack of sales. Expect some big box stores to close, small businesses to close, and so on. No one knows what Iran is going to do, but it will definitely be something major. They can't afford not to. All the smart people are predicting that they are weighing out how to do it without causing World War III. Once they have come up with a comprehensive plan, the fireworks will begin. How much can the U.S. protect Israel from annihilation? That's the big question everyone around the world is asking right now. There's a lot of reputation on the line for both Iran and the United States. If the U.S. fails to protect Israel like they have promised, then they will be ruined on the world stage, and the economic fallout will be very, very bad. If Iran decides not to retaliate out of fear of the U.S., they will lose a lot of face in the Middle East, especially with their proxies, Hezbollah and the Houthis, and a lot of their factions over in Syria and Iraq. They may decide to go ahead anyway without them. Iran can't afford that, so something is going to jump off very soon. I will conclude this episode with these last thoughts. What do you think about the possibility of American military personnel being on the ground in Western Russia, being killed as we speak? What do you think about the U.S. risking the deaths of thousands of sailors in the Eastern Mediterranean if Iran, Hezbollah, or the Houthis decide to fire a bunch of carrier-busted missiles at the aircraft carrier station out there? They do have that capability. Are you ready for a regional war that could very well explode into a global war in the Middle East and Western Russia? Are you willing to sacrifice American lives for Israel or Ukraine? Are you prepared for the economic blowback that will happen if the U.S. goes to open war again, like back in 2003? So I wish to thank everyone for joining me again this week. I hope to have an interview next week if the stars align right. I'm not sure with who at this point, but I have someone I'm working on from the Midwest for a show about tribalism, racism, and CRT in America. Be safe, everyone, and I'll be back next weekend with another Sunday edition, maybe. Sláinte. I want to take this minute to explain how you can support this podcast and tell you about my book. This podcast is free to subscribe to on all the major mobile podcast apps, on my YouTube channel, Crown of Biha, for the first 30 days on my Substack page, Crown of Biha, the Tree of Life, at Substack.com. With that in mind, I'm asking for donations of any amount. I decided that I would rather ask for donations instead of charging subscriptions, so everyone has an opportunity to watch or listen to this podcast everywhere in the world. All I'm asking for is help in defraying the cost to produce and distribute this podcast and maintain my website. I set up a donations tab on the Village Oak Tree webpage at rss.com and on my website at www.crownofbiha.com. Link to PayPal for your security. This way you can use any currency you wish from around the world, providing PayPal is available to you. Now let me tell you about my book. It's entitled The Fugitives in a New United States, which can be found at major online book retailers around the world, such as Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Lulu, and many others. It's available in hardcover, paperback, and digital ebook form. You can also buy a hardcover or a paperback edition from me directly through the bookstore page on my website. This is a fictional story about what the United States might look like by 2031 under an authoritarian religious government. It's full of drama, action, and romance, but I wrote it for young adults and older, so it's safe. Look for Fugitives in the New United States at your favorite online book retailer, and I hope you enjoy it. I appreciate your time and support, no matter how you choose to do so, and I thank you very much for taking the time out for me. Thank you for listening to the show today. I hope you enjoyed it and you'll return again for another episode of The Village Oak Tree. Please like, subscribe, and reply on the YouTube videos or the audio podcast where that's available. This helps with spreading the word about what I'm trying to do, like so many others, which is to shout about all the bad things our governments are doing to us all over the world. If enough of us decide that we don't want to take it anymore, we can force the governments to do right by us as we elected them to do. As I say goodbye this week, I wish to leave you with this Irish blessing as you go about your day. May your hand always be stretched out in friendship and never in want. Slán go fóill.